Moto America fans, it's time for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you may even learn something from this unlikely pair and their special guest. The mic is yours, Paul and Sean.
Hello, Moto America fans. It is early in the day, very early in the day for our communications manager, Paul Carruthers, out on the West Coast. Not as bad for me and not quite as bad for our guest this week, who we're happy to have on, first time for us. And I got to know this guy last year a little bit when he was racing. And let me say, it's Kyle Ohnsorg from Minnesota, who is an engineer who works with Indian and Polaris. And Kyle, last year was your first year with us, and you raced both King of the Baggers and Hooligan, Super Hooligan last year, right?
Yeah. Yep. Got a chance to race both efforts. I was supposed to race Super Hooligan for the entire season, and then a one-off round at Daytona with the bagger. And then the performance was pretty good. So we had a last minute effort to do the whole season on the bagger.
Yeah. That's really cool. Talk about performance being good. I mean, we're heading into the Coda round, and of course, I've seen the season entry list, and I know that you're on it. So I knew that you were going to be at COTA, as well as we published this week the group of riders that are going to be at COTA. But I wanted to get you on for sure, because last year was an amazing round for you at COTA. I mean, you had two top five finishes, and one of those top fives was actually a top three. You were in our press conference. You were on the podium in third place, and it was terrific for you because of your effort, because you work with the other Indian riders, but you know, you're almost supporting them in some ways, but you outdid all of them at COTA. So, you know, let's start by talking about last year and how you kind of got into it from the point of view of working for Indian and Polaris.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a long story, but I'll try and keep it short here, but I've been with Polaris, an Indian 8 years now. I helped design and test ride the original Challenger. So I was testing the traction control, ABS, other system functions on the bike. So I was out there on the stock platform with the trunks on it, sliding it around, evaluating how much slip, you know, what the different ride modes should be. and then when they said, hey, we're going to turn this thing into a race bike, I told them it's a terrible idea. What are we thinking? This is ridiculous. me and my boss, John Pox, went down to SNS, and we're looking at a stock Challenger with all the bags off of it. And they sat me on the bike, and they were asking, okay, what do you think we should do to turn this into a race bike? And I said, okay, the pegs kind of have to be backed by, you know, by almost the passenger pegs. This you know, kind of feels good here. And then we need to go way up. So I got a stack of regs and kept going up and up with the bike, taller and taller, and ended up with, you know, the bike that we ended up racing at Laguna Seca. the pegs are still in that position, and the seat height has gone up from there more. So we're kind of all tippy toes trying to get the center of gravity up on the bike for weight transfer. But I was there day one when Tyler was on the bike at a test track in Minnesota here. Just a small track here. we looked at each other and we're like, oh man, I would not want to be the one racing this thing, because it was so sketchy at first, the setup on it and just what we were trying to do. And it was a weird feeling for all of us coming from sport bikes. But I got a chance to ride the bike back to back with him and help develop it from day one. And then from there, they moved me to doing the test riding for the team, and then doing the suspension and chassis analysis. So MotoSpec and AIM, all that stuff.
So it's kind of cool, because say you don't have a good race and you're seventh or eighth or whatever you would consider to not be a very good race, and an Indian wins or an Indian's on the podium, you get gratification from having a big part in wherever they finish, right? I mean, that's got to feel good.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. So I was a tuner for Tyler, Bobby, and Jeremy on the back end. So the 2021 and 22 years, if you look during some of the stuff on Riders Out the Pit Wall, it's me running out there with a wrench, turning preload or whatever on the bike. And then when we do the test rounds on the between weekends, I'd be in my leathers, working with the riders out on the bike, riding it, looking at data, revalving the shock, and then saying, hey, let's try this now. Let's try this offset change, ride height, you know, whatever it may be. and then going back out and riding with the guys. And eventually my times were, they were impressive enough that they were like, okay, we just need to get you a ride. And Indian Engineering put together an internal effort, small, but a lot of guys really rallied to help out with that one. And yeah, we got the performance that you saw last year, even though we had no time to do testing. Our effort started after Daytona, the team was formed. I mean, I handpicked the guys from within Indian. It's like, okay, this should work. None of these guys have Moto America experience. And we eventually ended up on the podium. So we were racing with RSD using their old bike. They were nice enough to let us use it and then pit with them and get into their canopy. But we were racing out of like three Rubbermaid totes. S&S would haul our bike down for us, which was really, really nice of them. But it was a really small effort with a really outdated bike. And we just slowly updated stuff. I mean, I was swapping entire front ends of the bike throughout weekends. I'd be like, hey, you can use this part this weekend. It's like, yes. So we stole parts off of some of the 29er demo bikes. a couple of the weekends. So like midway through the weekend, you change a set of forks, triple trees, brakes and everything. And then you go out for, you know, warm up before race one. And they're like, good luck, kid. You know. So it was good. We eventually got the bike to be more competitive towards the end of the season and put some good efforts in. And then we had time with the same crew, same everything, running out of Indian R&D with a new team owner. And we got the bike way in advance. We had months to prepare it, strip it all down, rebuild it. We wanted some new prototype parts that we developed in-house. And then, yeah, did a really good effort at Daytona, minus my starts. So room for improvement on that launch control strategy. Yeah.
So Kyle, behind you, and I wanted to talk a little bit about your career. It looks like that's a PW50.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. is that yours? And is that where you got started as a racer?
Yeah. So I primarily have a motocross background. So 78 was my first ever race number. And that is my first, number plate and chest protector from when I was 3 or 4 years old, just starting the racing. So for our series or District 23 up in this area, you had to be, it's like 4 or 5 years old to start racing. But my older brother raced, and I guess I was just wreaking havoc on my parents, running around in my gear and not being able to race at the track. So they just didn't fill in the age box and let me go out and race. I can't remember if I won or I got, you know, third or something in the overall series that year, and, you know, went up there and got my little trophy and whatever at the end of the season for the championship. And they said, oh yeah, by the way, he's, you know, 3 or 4 years old. So yeah, that's where it started. And then from there, went up through the different classes, you know, super minis, 65s, A, B, C, 250s, 450s, and then did a bunch of flat track, ice racing. And then I believe it was around when I was like 15 or 16, I started getting into supermoto and sport bikes and thought, oh, that's cool. That's fun. And then, was going to, you know, I got into racing with that, went down to Daytona my first year, did well there. I think I got second as a race, had transitioned to expert that season, halfway through. And then, yeah, the next year we went kind of road racing full time, less the motocross stuff, even though my dad wasn't all that excited about it because it's a lot more money. And then after I graduated high school, I realized how expensive racing was going to be. And if I wanted to keep doing it, I needed to have a good career. And I liked engineering, you know, tinkering with stuff. I could rebuild motors, ECU stuff, whatever, and chassis stuff. But I never knew it was in the black box on the newer motorcycles. And that's
no one does.
Yeah. So I went for I didn't know the motors, had a good idea on the chassis stuff, materials, whatever. So I went for electro engineering and a computer science minor. Was out racing the entire time through all of that. And then I started interning at Polaris. I want to say it was my second year of college or something.
Wow.
Or third year. So I was doing way too much, and then trying to do, you know, we did some Moto America stuff on top of that, with some not so competitive bikes. There's some early stats I think you guys had listed somewhere on it, but got a top 10 at Road America and just never really had the funding to go and do it, but had the pace. And then as I was going through and I got hired on full time with Indian, it eventually just kind of came up little by little. It's like, hey, I know how to ride, you know, a little bit here and there. And they eventually just started to see what I was able to do, and eventually got me on a bike, and they knew I could do the development side, ride the bike, provide good feedback that aligned with the data. And then I could look over all the data and then make just progressive improvements on the bike. So, and that's really how I got into the, you know, the bagger racing side of it. So it was a really weird whole loophole of being all in the background the entire time and just kind of trying to help out when I could. And then it's, yeah, it just, you know, transition. We've done well enough, and the guys internally have helped and within Indian, and you know, we've gotten the results that you've all seen. So
that's truly like a dream job for you. I mean,
oh yeah,
you know, when you're young and you go to college, you have a vision of like, oh, I'll do this and I'll do this, and you actually were able to merge the two things together. I guess Sean and I did also, when you think about it, but
right,
it's got to be a dream job.
Yeah. I mean, motorcycles are all I pretty much live and breathe. My wife, she has a few bikes of her own. She rides with me, on-road, off-road stuff, whatever. But yeah, no, it really is a dream job. I get to wake up, you know, go to work, help design bikes from the ground up, which is pretty cool. I mean, on the tuning side, you usually get the back end of the bikes. So you're always fixing errors or trying to correct stuff of what you want the bike to do. But being internal in the factory, and seeing stuff from the ground up, having input from there, has been really, really neat. So just learning like different chassis flex, you know, if a swing arm's too soft and it's moving around versus if it's too stiff, kind of what the trade-offs are, and just really being able to understand it from an engineering side and just from the initial start the whole way through has been really cool.
So you specialize in maybe chatter?
I don't know, chatter. Yeah. I think I specialize more in getting rid of chatter, which is it's tough, but yeah, right. Understanding why you're getting it and whatever is there's a lot to it. So too much flex, you'll get it. Not enough flex, you also get it.
Right.
You know, it's funny. I actually have an article I've been working on. It's kind of been waiting in the wings because chatter. I learned a long time ago from Chris Lessing, who is a suspension guy with Graves, and he hates that word chatter. He just hates it because it's undefinable. But I've learned a little bit about chatter. Chatter can be caused sometimes by the tire. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, if the compound's too hard or the temperature isn't quite right, or there's, you know, a low grip surface, definitely.
It's like a grip slip thing sometimes, I guess is what they call it. Totally. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many different inputs that go into whether it's chassis or how you have the weight balance on the bike. If you're overloading or underloading, you'll get that same effect, but figuring out why is the tough one. So,
well, because there's so many causes, obviously that's probably it, right? Yeah. So Paul knows this, and people that follow us know that I always like to recognize the wives and girlfriends. So last year I was able to meet your wife, Kyle, and let's talk about her a little bit. So she's on your crew. She was on your crew last year. You mentioned that she an engineer as well? And does she also work for Indian Polaris?
She's not with Indian, but she is a software engineer. Yep. Before I met her, she had no interest in motorcycles, kind of, you know, never rode. Now she can revalve shocks. She works with customers, through our own suspension company, Adrenal Engineering. So she has, you know, all these grown men coming up to her basically saying, my bike's doing this. And then she's able to go through and, fix it with or without data. But she's gotten really proficient with, the AIM chassis analysis stuff. So I'll come off the track and tell her, hey, I'm struggling in this section. Can you have a look at it? And then I can debrief with the rest of the guys and then go to her and she'll say, hey, it's pumping here, or the shock's moving too quick, or, you know, whatever. It's a whole, she's gotten good at diagnosing feedback from riders, I guess. And then she knows the chassis enough and she rides enough that herself that she can, translate those and knows what to look for. So, but she works with Chloe.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. And they become good friends.
I was going to ask you that. I figured they did. I mean, she's all about AIM Chloe. So that's good that those guys work together. Did you guys meet in college?
Yeah. Yeah. We met when we were in college. Yeah,
that's cool. So Kyle, I got to tell you this. I met my wife in college, and my wife's an English teacher, middle school English teacher. So she and I have conversations all the time about dangling participles and things like that. Do you guys have conversations about engineering? Like, obviously you do on the track, but do you do it at home too?
Oh yeah. Every day. Every day she's, there's portions of stuff that she knows, and then portions that I know. And since I've been doing, you know, motorcycle stuff my entire life, she has questions of like, hey, so when you're on the bike and suppose this happens, what would you do? You know, and it's just a never ending thing. So we'll be looking at, well, the shock apart or something, I'll have a shim stack out. We'll be going to revalve it, whether it's for motocross or road race. And she'll ask me, what's the force velocity curve look like, you know, with that change, which is, you know, the top tuners in the world, that's what they're looking at. So she's learning and she's asking the right questions, but yeah, it's pretty much an everyday thing. She's got some new question or some new thing that we're trying to work out together. So it's a really cool opportunity. I mean, I get to travel around with my best friend, you know.
That's so good.
We have so much fun with it. And the whole team, it's all, I mean, none of us are getting paid to go and do it. It's just, and you know, thankfully a couple of the people that I picked within the team, they were in my wedding as well. And it's not just that they were friends within the company. It's the right people, that you'd want. So, it's a small team. It's my wife doing the data acquisition stuff and helping out with whatever other components. And then, was it three other guys from within Indian, that come to the track with us. So it's, Shane, Williams, my crew chief. So he actually was the project lead for the original Challenger when that came out.
Wow. And,
have a John Acker. He's my lead mechanic. And, he's the main, tech within, Indian Motorcycles for the Challenger platform. So he helps out SNS there, kind of back and forth a little bit. If they have questions, they get stuck on, and Shane actually rebuilt my motors, with some other guys in Indian, but it's quite capable there. And then, Dave Shea is my engine calibration, guy on the team. So I mean, he's one of the top guys within Indian, for that stuff.
Wow.
So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you,
that's our whole team.
Oh yeah.
One photo. And then we had our three totes and yeah.
There you go.
And that, small effort.
And that's your trophy from COTA above there, the third place. So pointing that out, I want to ask you about that. So Paul alluded to this. You get excited if your guys win, but you finished ahead of all the Indians at COTA in both races. So obviously no team orders. If there's a situation, I mean, do you have to defer to them or do you just do whatever you want? I mean, what's your mentality when those guys are out there?
Yeah. I mean, I've worked with all those guys for so long now, when I was on the tuning side that it's, nobody's bummed out to see me, you know, up front, I guess, within Indian. We put in so much effort and it's really just been an entire team effort, but yeah, there's no team orders or anything. It's all just do what you can. And we all share information. There's not a whole lot of Indians out there, at the moment, as far as a race team. So it's a really tight knit group and we all have to work together and collaborate. So some of the stuff that I found last year, we had a really small budget, not a ton of test time, but I knew the chassis side of it. And I found some stuff that, I shared with, SNS towards the end of the season, that went into the new bike. So I was down there with them. They invited me down to go to Daytona in the fall and, test with Tyler. So we did, back-to-back riding, developing, trying different stuff, seeing what he liked, seeing what worked, and we were able to find some pretty good pace and then get a list of, new items and new direction to try for this season, which, I think has shown definitely at Daytona within all the performance of the Indians, a lot of stability improvements. So not so much a wiggle.
we always talk about the rivalry with Harley Davidson and Indian. Yeah. That obviously has to be inside of you as well, right? I mean, you show up at the track every day and there's a goal of trying to beat the Harley Davidsons.
Yeah, it's
you seem like such a nice guy. I find it hard for you to be like,
yeah, no, it's I wouldn't say it's a rivalry. There's a really fun It's a long, long history, and just the competitiveness of it, I think, is the cool part for me. And everyone on both ends is trying so hard and working to find anything they can with these bikes. And we're getting down to some really nitty gritty stuff. You know, I don't know if we're getting to wind tunnels or whatever on our end, but we're doing things in these bikes that they were never meant to do, and basically taking. I don't even know what year I want to put it to, but if you took an old superbike and then you were to try and race it now or put somebody more modern on it, they'd be like, oh, what is this? And you'd have to try and learn how to improve the chassis and how to get it to a modern sport bike. I mean, most of the bikes that are produced now that are intended for it, a lot of those kinks have been worked out. So we're all, as engineers and racers, trying to figure out what this feeling is or how to improve it or how to get this stuff to go away, because these bikes, when you're pushing them that hard, things move and twist or don't twist. and trying to sort that out is pretty difficult. So then we have all the data and all the engineers and everything behind it. So being able to be in both groups of it and understand the data and engineering and what goes into it, and then ride it and feel it and be able to connect those two worlds, that's probably the biggest advantage for me. So, and then taking it and doing what we can to, you know, try and be out front.
Yeah. I would think with a guy with your background, that's gotta be a lot more fun and a lot more challenging than going to buy an R1 and turn it into a superbike, because you buy the stuff, you put it on, and you know what you've got. But this for you has gotta be like, every day has just gotta be like, oh wow, we found this, or this doesn't work, or seems cool.
Yeah. And I think you'll see that with a lot of the bagger racers as well. Just, everyone is learning so much. I mean, even when I was working with Jeremy, I mean, he did MotoGP. He brought in a lot of knowledge right away, just on what, like I said, what should flex or what shouldn't. And we had rims flexing, you know, and that was causing some of the wiggles. So we had to go to stiffer rims, which,
wow.
I mean, when we're wow. like, you know, like, why? Okay. Yeah. We proved it out. We were able to determine that. And then we went to stiffer rims and it solved it. But how, you know, on a normal sport bike, that's not a scenario. You know, right. Feel what too soft of a wheel is like.
Right.
That's incredible. I would have never thought he would have figured that. So guys, in some ways, you know, Kevin Cameron made this analogy. You guys are kind of the way it was back in the original days of the liter bike size super bikes, the KZ1000s. You know, you guys have a liquid cooled engine. Harley's air cooled, but it was air cooled then to develop more liquid cooled. But those bikes had flexi frames on them, and they were obviously longer, bigger, and all that kind of stuff. A little bit with Super Hooligan too, but for sure with you guys. It's just funny how, you know, those bikes got turned into race bikes and improved the craft. I don't know that the whole, the paradigm of a touring bike is going to change too much, because it's still got to be a touring bike, but you guys at least make them go fast. And you mentioned about your starts. It surprises me a little, Kyle. I got to talk to you about that, because that's a thing that's incredible. I'm not saying I could do it, but man, those things get off the line like crazy. They're so fast off the line. What's it reaction time for you? What's the deal?
So last year we got pretty comfortable with the bike, and we didn't have a lot of effort, you know, a lot of test time at all. I mean, our testing was all done at the round. So I'd go into the track, like Coda. I went into that weekend, new valving front and rear, entirely different front end, different brakes, different ECU mapping. I think we had a different swing arm even. I'd never been to the track at all. I played it in a sim, trying to get used to how many turns there were and what we were doing. But I went into the weekend just like, oh boy, I hope all this works. no testing prior with basically an entirely new bike. And we had a long ways to go as far as development and trying to catch everything up. So the entire weekend, we're going out making huge changes to the bike. And every time we do it, it's in the right direction. It's always, for the most part, data driven, along with my feedback. But it's, that was most of our season. Just, man, we're going to the weekend, no testing, best effort. And, launch control, I just didn't use it last year. I was just, okay, I knew if I started at, you know, at the X RPM, as a decent start, if it was above that, I would wheelie, whatever. And, it's always good at starts in motocross. So it's never been an issue for me, but we tried launch control at Daytona. We thought we had a strategy that was going to work. And, the first time I did, I had a good jump, was lined up to get around Gillum on the start and kind of go into that front group, but I hit paint. So the wheel spun up. So the wheel spun up. You can see it go like this. My face hits the tank, and then I get to the end of the paint and it re-grips, then I wheelie. So the clutch was already all the way out. Everything was done. So I was like, ah, dang it. Okay, good start. Launch control worked. And then I went into the second one, and we're using a GPS speed, which is not, because we can't have wheel speed inputs, to shut off the launch control when there's movement. So, and because it's a little bit slow, we found out, and not quite as accurate, right? Because it's not an exact pinpoint. The launch control sticked on for too long. So I had the clutch all the way out and I'm going, but it was still holding that RPM, and then it finally shut off, and you know, everyone else had already gone. So it's either don't use it again like last year and just rely on what I know, or what we've done is go a different route with the strategy for the MotoGP round here. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about Daytona. You got sixth in both races. Were you happy with that? Did you get to battle with anyone at that point, or were you stuck by yourself? Because I know at Daytona, if you get stuck by yourself, it's incredibly hard to go forward.
Yeah. So the first race did not get a great start. So dropped back a bit. I think I was like probably like 10th or 11th, and I had to fight my way up through. And then by that point, I was trying to chase down Rocco, and him and I were just kind of doing slinky the entire time, and neither of us had a draft. We were struggling with rear grip, so we made some changes for race two. That really helps. We went out and warm up and we're like, oh, okay, this looks like it could be promising. And we went out for race two. Not a great start again. Was like 10th, but made some more aggressive moves in the start. Got myself I think it was like 6th or 7th or something. And then I was able to catch, so I didn't have a draft at first, but I was able to catch up to that lead group, and I think I had the quickest lap of the race for a good portion of race two. And then passed Hayden and was going to work on Rispoli. I almost had a look on the inside of him before we went on to the first banking. And I'm really wishing I would have, because that was right before Gillum. He messed up the brakes. He came in completely sideways next to me, blowing the corner. And I thought, oof, that sucks for him. You know, his race is over. And instead of just going through the little chicane kind of cut through thing, I think he had done the same in the 200 as well and lost the draft. So I'm sure he was frustrated on that one, but he cut through the grass on the infield, and you can see it on the live feed or whatever, him going through the grass sideways, and then it snaps back to him coming back onto the track. And I almost T-boned him. I was you're going pretty good through there, the pace. I was like panic braking, so the front was doing this, and almost T-boned him. And then by that point I lost the draft in that front group, but the real win for us for the weekend was that we could run the pace. Like we had the fourth fastest time of race two, and that we were able to catch and battle with that front group. So as short of a time as it lasted, we were able to reel them in, and then confident be able to run the pace. And then, the bike is competitive. All my training off season, physically, we're in a good spot. So we know we can do it. That was the big win for us. So I wouldn't say we're happy with the sixth. I mean, we had better results last year, but it was, I mean, everyone finished the race and we were still right in that mix. So
yeah, they always say getting out of Daytona with good points is
right.
Yeah.
So the potential for your program this year is bigger than it was last year, because you were kind of unknown. I don't mean unknown as a rider, but it was unknown as far as what you were going to do. You got some encouragement at COTA, and then this year going into it, you put together a program based on what you did last year and made improvements, right?
Yep, exactly. So yeah, I mean, like I said, last year the team wasn't formed, and we weren't planning on going racing baggers. So it wasn't until after Daytona, and it was like a week before Road Atlanta, that we actually had a team assembled. And then from that point, we were trying to update basically a 2019 bike to be competitive, but it wasn't like, all right, here's a bunch of budget, here's these parts, have fun. It was like, hey, here's enough to hopefully get you through the season. I mean, we're talking like under 100 grand for, and that's hotels, flights, everything.
Wow.
Any bike parts. So we really, S&S helped us out a good bit. So we got some of their parts from the previous bikes But I mean, even by the end of the season, we weren't even up to like a 22 spec bike. So Bobby's bike and my bike, they looked similar, but they were pretty far off. Mm. And we were just trying to scrap together and find whatever we could between the rounds to get the bike to where we needed without having test time or budget. The only times I got to ride the bagger last year was just at the Motomarca rounds, and it was typically a new track for me. So,
and the bikes developed to the point where you can't sneak parts out of the back of the shop and
use. No, and that's where it was a little bit, it was kind of interesting because they had built the 29er bikes that they've sold now, but there was one sitting at Road America on display that had the good swing arm, the good triple trees, the good, good brakes, good forks. And we're just sitting there like, man, if we could just race that one, we know it can be competitive. I mean, I've tested with those guys, helped develop that bike. I know I can run the pace on the same bike. So since it was just sitting there and we got the approval to run it, it was after hours, after all the fans, everyone had gone home. They said, yeah, you can take the bike at the end of the day, swap out the entire front end. So after all the qualifying, everything, we went and swapped out the front end at night. The two bikes were lined up. We got some photos of it. It's pretty funny. And it's kind of like a, hey, don't tell anyone type of thing, you know, whatever, don't crash it and, see what you can do. And we were able to prove that with those parts, we were able to run. I ran over a second and a half faster, but mm-hmm. from that point, you have to redevelop the bike. You know, you're swapping half the thing, you know,
right. So
it's like, is the valving right? Should be, you know, I stayed up late and revalved the stacks and whatever, and then different springs but the brake feel, everything is all, it's all different. So
I want to mention, talk to you a little bit about being a test rider.
Yeah.
And I always think about this with the MotoGP guys. There's got to be a fine line there. You have to go fast enough to make the stuff either work or not work, but you also have to have a line there where you don't go crashing the bike all the time. Is that sometimes I would think that would be more difficult than being a racer.
Yeah. So there's definitely there's always that feeling of like, okay, like I don't want to crash this. I don't want to mess it up because then the team has to rebuild the bike. And that's a tough one, but no, at the same time, you have to push in order to feel what they're feeling. And fortunately my riding background was always riding around issues and then having to solve them because we didn't have money ever to go and throw out the problem. So that's kind of how I learned the feel and what the bike should be doing. And but yeah, so I was able to match the pace always of Jeremy and Tyler during the tests. As a tuner, I could feel what was going on and know what to change before I even got off the bike and looked at data. So, and then I could look at the data then and see if it aligned and compared to what the guys were feeling. So I could feel exactly what they were feeling and said, hey, I know you guys are thinking that it's this, but really what's going on is this. And then I could show them in the data, and then it just led to, you know, just better changes and just quicker changes throughout and just always a positive direction. I wasn't really guessing at that point. It was, we had good confidence in it. And then I would have ideas or theories that we'd come up with, you know, internally in the factory, or myself that I wanted to try on the bike, you know? So I think, you know, I would be trying different stuff like, hey, let's try this offset or these triple trees, you know? And then SNS was awesome about like, okay, yeah, just, you know, Kyle said, we want to try it. Yeah. Let's try it. And, we found quite a bit of things doing that. And then I'd have a, you know, Tyler hop on the bike and be like, hey, let me know what you think of this. And, you know, it was typically always good and an improvement. So, definitely a fun role to be in, just loving the engineering side of it and understanding what's going on and then being able to run that pace has been really cool. Yeah.
I want to talk a minute about the two bikes, and I mean the Harley versus the Indian, Kyle. This is not in any way to disparage the Harley Davidson, the motor company, but they will admit that they've got a fairly traditional architecture to that bike. I mean, it's an air-cooled V-twin engine. It is twin-cooled. It's got some liquid cooling in the exhaust valve side of the thing, but primarily a lot of it's still air-cooled, and they work on getting airflow through that engine. You guys have a pretty sophisticated engine. I mean, it's liquid-cooled. It's pretty serious. I think you can run higher rev limits than the Harley, or?
Yeah, I think we're, so we're, I believe we're at 77 or 78, 100 that we have. And I think they're 72 or 74.
Right.
Yeah, can't remember. Yeah, it used to be wide open. So, and
right.
You could hear it if you watch the old videos versus the new stuff. Everyone shifting earlier, basically.
but the engine is kind of is a weapon. I mean, what do you think about that engine and the fact? What do you think about that bike in general? I mean, I understand it's a touring bike, but it's pretty sophisticated, right?
Yeah, even like I said, I was riding the bike when it was in stock trim and helping, you know, slide the thing around and do some of the kind of what we're doing now. I mean, you're not going to drag me on a stock bike, but you're scraping stuff from the ground and trying to do more performance activities. It's extremely capable, that whole platform. So even just in street trim, that's a really fun proper bike. That's my most favorite bike within the company. You think it'd be the FTR 1200, but that Challenger, it's a good platform. So just fun, nimble, plenty of power, and there's room for more, as we've shown. Yep. And yeah, and the Indians have always been known for having the top end, right? So the longer tracks with long straightaways, we've always had an advantage in that regard. So last year, towards the end of the season, I didn't have the same package as the factory team. So my bike was about the same down the straightaways, I found, as the Vance and Hines bikes. The factory bikes, I could hardly keep up in a draft with. And then Harley was towards the end of the season was a bit quicker than my bike. So that was kind of how they compared. And then this year, I mean, we found some more in the motor on the S&S side, and then testing internal. And then Harley obviously found some gains as well. So everything kind of got reshuffled, and I'm not sure if we have that advantage anymore. We'll see at COTA, that long back straightaway. We'll learn some more there, but between the two factory teams, I mean, it's really close. So closer than it's been in previous years, but I think Harley has definitely had the chassis in the past. I don't know if it's just the way that they develop it. There's less stress and the tube structure, you know, they're able to do some different stuff with that. Yeah, we've had motor we've relied on in the past, and that's kind of gone away now, but we've made so many improvements with our chassis and found some stuff that, it's even the playing field in both areas. So they caught up with motor to Indian, and then we caught up with chassis.
That's cool.
To them. So
that's an interesting observation, something to look at for fans to see how that develops as it goes on. You know, you surprised me a little bit. I mean, I guess maybe not, because you are racing in King of the Baggers. So it would make sense that you would say the Indian Challenger is your favorite. But for me, from my perspective, being kind of afraid of that big Leviathan, I relate more to that, the Super Hooligan, the FTR. I mean, I love that bike. I love to watch that thing go around the track. I don't think I could probably ride it. I couldn't race it. But my point is, it's just a cool bike that worked great in flat track, and it's doing great in Super Hooligan as well. I mean, Tyler won the championship with that thing last year. So it's a pretty versatile motorcycle, and it probably is going to do pretty well this year too. Do you miss, you're not going to ride in Super Hooligan this year. Do you miss riding it at all?
So honestly, no.
Yeah.
I really, if you ask any of the guys, I mean, they might tell you a different answer, but we prefer riding the baggers much more.
Wow.
It's more comfortable. It's more predictable. And just less twitchy, I guess. Kind of, I think they found some different stuff for this season. So I've not been involved in that effort, more just the bagger effort. But when I was riding it, it was a twitchy death machine, kind of no matter what we did with it. And so we found out, and I didn't really get a good effort at running that series, unfortunately. We didn't find out until the end of the season that there was fuel getting on my tire, only under extreme hard brake conditions. They didn't have a one-way valve on the tank. So when I'd brake, you know, race brake effort, gas would go down into the belly pan and then mist onto the tire, and then it'd evaporate by the time I got back. And so it was intermittent. So if I was up for practice or whatever, it wouldn't happen. If it wasn't a really hard braking corner, everything was fine. But it was only during qualifying or race efforts that it would happen. And that's what caused my crash at Daytona that everyone saw. and the crash at COTA during qualifying. And throughout the year, we were trying to figure it out. And we had limited people, limited resources, really. The bike, it wasn't at the R&D facility like the Bagger was. So we didn't really get to get hands on it or do any testing. We just go on the weekend and RSD would be looking for stuff and be like, okay, we think we found it. The frame was bent. Let's try this now. And let's go to the round. And I'd go out for two laps and, do some hard braking and then go to the edge of the tire and the thing would snap out on me, but it wasn't every time. So that thing was horrifying to ride in that regard. But even if it's not getting fuel in the tire, they're still pretty uncomfortable to ride as a whole. So
I didn't realize they look cool going around the track.
Yep. So Larry Pegram was, he replaced Bobby. Bobby got a superbike ride.
Yes.
Which is awesome for him. I know he's more excited about that. He did not like riding the FTR. So he was not bummed out about that. So that bike didn't have the issue. They had a check valve on it. And then Pegram rode it at Laguna Seca and I just refused to ride it. I'd go out, try stuff, almost crash my brains out and then go back in. And it's like, guys, this something is very wrong. Like I cannot ride this thing. Something's getting the tire. And they kept telling me, no, it's not a whole thing. So I just focused on the Bagger. And then they rebuilt Pegram's bike and he went to COTA and they didn't put the check valve in. So he came off the track and he's saying, I can't ride this thing. It's doing this. It's trying to kill me. It's stepping out.
Wow.
And then the whole team is just like, everyone's like, what do we do? Everyone's freaking out. And you can see during qualifying, whatever, we're just sitting there on the wall because we can't ride the things. And they figured it out right before a race. Race two or something. I can't remember, but, so I missed qualifying. I wouldn't go out and ride that thing. I already crashed that weekend because it was stepping out on me and I was trying to just ride around it. And, so I didn't qualify. So I think I gridded up like 45th or something on the grid. So way back there. and we knew the fuel thing was figured out, but I think I made it up to, I think it was seventh or eighth within two or three laps.
Incredible. Or something.
so there's a lot more development and stuff we could have done on that bike. It's like I said, it's a bummer. We didn't really get a good chance to develop it or really have an effort with it just because there was an issue that we just didn't solve or didn't have time to solve basically. And, I had so many moments on that thing, because of it, that even when they did get it fixed, I had no confidence in it. It was the first time I was really able to ride it. And, bit of a bummer. So,
hey, Paul, I know we're getting close to being out of time here, but I got to ask Kyle two kind of quicker questions. So off the wall stuff, Kyle, have you spent your entire life in Minnesota?
Yeah. Yep. Born and raised here. So
you have no accent.
Got a little.
Yeah. If you start going more north, then you kind of get it. Like the Minnesota, it's not, you don't do the hard O. You get it here and there, but you really have to be going more up north or kind of the Dakotas before you get that. Yeah.
The real one.
Yeah. 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 You get this one, you know?
Yeah. So you're used to hearing it, but yeah, you don't have it too much, at least in my mind. The other question, this is very off the wall, but since you started out on a PW50 and you were a motocross rider, I have to ask you about one of my all-time favorite people and one of my all-time favorite motocross guys. They were both motocross. Donnie Schmidt.
Yep.
Do you remember him?
Yeah, I mean, I was born in 94, so
he's pretty young.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little but I hear all the stories and everything, and they're jumps here at the local tracks that, is still the, Donnie Schmidt, tabletop or whatever. So it's, yeah.
Yeah. I loved that guy. And the thing about him was he started to make a transition to road racing too. He started to ride, I think, a YZF 600 towards the end there. The other guy I really love is Jeremy Martin too. I just, you probably know him. Yeah.
Yeah. But I grew up battling and racing with him in the Dungies as well. So
yeah, the Dungies. Yes.
Yeah. Ryan Dungy's younger brother, Blake, we went to the same school, grew up in the same town. So we all ended up racing together. I was good friends with him, but, yeah, they went the motocross route, and I was along that whole path, as far as Loretta's, like traveling around the country with my family, doing all that stuff. And then, that was kind of going to be my path, and then got into road racing a bit. Like I said, it didn't make my dad too happy, but, went out, bought my own bike, leathers, everything. And, you know, got into that on the side, but you know, the main focus was still motocross at that point. And then, did really well on the sport bike stuff, and then got some sponsors, some support. And that's kind of what we could afford to race, you know. And then when I was in college, that's really all I could afford to race.
Yeah.
with the help and sponsorship that I got.
Well, we know that you didn't make your dad very happy, but you've made us very happy to be on the podcast, but also to be a road racer and what you're doing with Indian. I mean, it's great. The rivalry is terrific. You're getting up there with those guys and mixing it up. It's a cool story to hear about what you're doing with your wife and everything too. And, yep. And like Paul said, it's gotta be cool for you to, you know, you're kind of living your best life right now. And that's really, really, we're happy for you on that. We can't wait to see you at Coda in a couple, won't be long now, a few days. We'll be down there. So,
yep.
But yeah, thanks so much for being on with us this time, and we'll catch up to you when we're at Austin.
Yeah. Thanks, Kyle. Absolutely. See you in a couple of weeks or less than that, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Appreciate the time, guys. See you.